You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking again with Edgar Oliver. Edgar, thanks so much for being with me today.
Yeah, happy snowy day, Brainerd.
Yes, so let's talk about this day. It's Sunday, it's February 7th in 2021, and you're in New York City at Carlton Arms. I don't know where you are right now, but the snow is coming down in enormous amounts. Is that correct?
Yes, yeah, I'm at the Carlton Arms Hotel, and out the window it's snowing a lot, yeah.
Edgar, I'm in New Haven, and it's also snowing quite a bit. Okay. Yeah, it's coming down, huge flakes, and makes me feel like running out there and making a snowman, but I haven't done that yet.
I saw lots of snowmen recently.
You've seen a lot or you've made a lot?
I've seen lots of snowmen in the past, well, on my walks recently.
Edgar, I know you're going to read some poems today, but I think the third time we've talked, and I'm excited to talk to you again, and it also allows us to get, I think, deeper into some subjects. And, what I find so interesting about talking to you is in part the way you experience New York, and it initially reminded me of this very kind of romantic New York, this New York that is filled with just interesting things to see and look at as you wander around the city, the best of the city. And yesterday I read something by Mark Grief in a book called a wonderful writer in a book called Against Everything, some essays, and he was talking about aesthetics, and the way he talked about aesthetics, and he was just kind of outlining different ways of thinking of philosophy, and he says, you know, we can look at a painting, and we can look at a drawing, and we can see its surface, and we can enjoy the drawing or painting on its surface, but then we can also go further into it, of course, right, and we get involved in the painting, involved in the drawing, involved in the poem. It somehow creates a world that we walk into and have this, kind of very very aesthetic experience of life, this very sensual, this special, very alive experience. And so the idea of aesthetics to him in terms of perceiving life is that, you know, can we look at everything in life as a work of art, and not just its surface when we see it, but able to get into its world and what's happening there, you know, thus creating not consumerism or being self-conscious or egoism, but just a kind of a constant aesthetic, artistic experience with the world that way. And, you know, I thought that was so beautiful, and I love that, and it reminded me of you and perhaps how you experienced New York. What do you think about that?
Well, I do think that a lot of my writing over the past 30 years has been about my wanderings in New York. It's true, I write a lot about wandering in the city, you know, and I guess that that I'm always trying to find, you know, a poem from my wandering. So I'm, I guess, trying to do what he was talking about, you know.
And it's such an awesome, lovely way of experiencing a city, because you are in New York, and so many of these are about New York and New Yorkers and how you're perceiving them. It seems to me a bit of an ode to the city itself, or that's how I experience it a bit.
Goody, I'm glad that you feel that way because I do think that I like to think I'm writing an ode to New York. Yeah.
Well, it also, you know, I mean, there are poems and writings that sometimes you read or I read and I think, oh my God, this was written for me. Do you know that experience where you read something and it just seems as though it was written just for you? Of course it wasn't. And sometimes that happens in your work or in other work, but part of what I get from your work is also a feeling sometimes that, oh my gosh, this is my poem, this was written for me, but also this is the city that I love. This is the place I love. Almost, you know, I want to be Edgar Oliver.
Goody. I'm glad that you feel sometimes when you read things I write that they were written for you. That makes me happy.
Well, I'd love to hear one of your poems. I know you're going to read three again. What is that? What is the first one?
I wanted to read something that I wrote pretty recently called Basketball. So I guess I'll just launch into it.
Please do, yeah.
Okay. I'm sitting in the little park between East Broadway and Henry Street. I'm sitting on a bench facing the moon, the beautiful white shining moon up there in the night sky. It's the night before Thanksgiving, a clear, still night, not very cold, a sweet, still night. Usually, I would be afraid to sit here all alone in this park this late, afraid they were going to come lock up the park and lock me in. But I'm not afraid because right behind me on the basketball court, a boy is playing basketball all by himself. He's shooting hoops, I guess. I don't know. He's behind me, but he's bouncing the basketball around the court. I can hear him. With him there, I'm not afraid they'll come lock up the park and lock me in. I sit there and look at the night, tail lights of cars going away down Henry Street, the distant laughter of passers-by, the branches of the winter trees, and a few yellow leaves that still cling to the branches, a few strips of cloud that drift by like gray smoke up there in the night. And I realize that I love the sound a basketball makes when it bounces. It's a beautiful sound. It's one of my favorite sounds in the whole world, I think. I don't know why. There's a hollowness to it, but so much life somehow. You can hear the ball give as it strikes the ground. You can hear the ball rebound from the earth as it bounces. You can hear the rhythmic arm of the boy bouncing it. What a beautiful, friendly, companionable sound, a basketball bouncing about in the night, the vast hollow night, a basketball being bounced by a boy beneath the moon. I'm not afraid because I hear him there behind me, bouncing his basketball. And then I realize that there's a strange, deep voice, a deep, hoarse voice crying on the air, a deep, hoarse voice like the cry of a ship's horn. And then I realize this voice is crying words. Locking up, the voice cries, locking up over and over. And I hear the metal clanging of a chain against iron bars. And there's a man there at the gate ready to chain it shut. Locking up, he cries over and over. And the boy goes his way onto Henry Street, and I head off through the gate onto East Broadway, and the man locks up the perk. Locking up, I hear his voice cry in the distance as I walk away. It's the first time I ever dared stay late enough to see him locking up. The night watchman of the park. And the only reason I dared stay was because of the companionable boy and his basketball. So that's that.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Edgar. It's such a beautiful poem, and once again, it is this beautiful aesthetic as I'm seeing it. And please correct me, or we can move to something else. But we not only hear the ball, we go inside the ball, inside this world, inside the most beautiful, peaceful sanctuary in New York. Through your careful observation, which is, it seems such a warm and comforting world to be in.
Goody.
and so that was Thanksgiving, and that was Thanksgiving 2020. I imagine this was just this past year.
Yeah.
And so before you read another poem, what will happen today? Are you going out into the snow? What happens today?
Well, I haven't been out yet, but after we speak, I'm going to go shopping to get a bite to eat for lunch, and then come back here and then have lunch and then read for a while, and then I think I'll walk down to my house on Attorney Street.
And so is your house open on Attorney Street, because you're temporarily in Carlton Arms, and you still have your home, your apartment on Attorney Street?
Yeah, I think I'm going to spend the night there, because I'm going to go to the doctor tomorrow, and he's down quite close to my place on Attorney Street. So I'll stay down there tonight.
and you can cook down there, but you can't cook in Carlton Arms. Is that how it works? Does Carlton Arms have a kitchen so you can have a meal, or no?
No, I can't cook here, so I get here. I live on takeouts. I've been going a lot to this place called Eataly.
And is that good there? Is that good takeout? New York is now the takeout capital, right? With everything being almost closed everywhere.
Eataly is a great place to get takeouts.
And so when you're wandering today, is there time figured in for that? Will you go to a park today, or is it too snowy for that? Will you just have food, or does that matter? Is it always part of the wandering as you go from Carlton Arms to your apartment on Attorney Street or to the market?
Well, I think it's a bit too snowy to sit in the park today, you know. So, I mean, it looks pretty intense out there.
Well, and even without the snow, I mean, just the other day I was in New York, and it strikes me that there is, you know, just a fraction of the population that there was before the pandemic. Is that how you experience New York now, too, that there is so few people in it, or no?
Well, it does seem sort of empty these days. Yeah. You know.
And does that change your experience of New York? Is that changing the... Because I always felt that, you know, when you go to Brooklyn or another part of New York, you can feel how everything quiets down a little bit. It's quieter in Brooklyn. It's quieter at night, right? Or on certain holidays. But does New York have some kind of different quality of being quiet, or some different kind of energy now in the pandemic for the last year when there's been so little tourism?
Yeah, I think so. It's just been emptier and quieter and more desolate, I guess. But and I kind of like that.
It seems to me that kind of feeling is also kind of like the East Village in the 80s and different times of New York, maybe Times Square in the 70s or 60s, you know, these times of New York when there was not a very good economy, and yet the arts flourished somehow. That's the 80s were a wonderful time for the arts, as were other times when the city was, as you say, a little bit desolate.
New York in the 80s was tons of fun. Yeah, it was an amazing time. Yeah.
And does it seem at all like that now? I mean, there was plenty of tourism in New York, but there were also affordable places to live for artists still, which is what made the difference. And I was thinking that might be what's returning in some way.
Well, I hope that will be true. I don't know, but I hope so. No, that would be a good aspect of the whole pandemic.
And does the experience of being in New York and talking to people or seeing people, is there a different social experience now? I know there's this sense of a kind of physical desolation, but also do you feel there's any difference in the social quality of New York? Is it more neighbors to neighbors, or because there's less tourists, or no?
I don't know. I always do feel a certain neighborly quality in when I'm shop around where I live. And I'm also now starting to feel that way up near the Carlton Arms, too, because I'm up here so much. And I feel that way a lot around Prospect Park, because I go there so much, you know.
Prospect Park is your favorite park. I know you've written about it quite a bit in your performances and in your poems. Prospect Park is a very special place for you, it seems. And there are, of course, multiple parks around you. Washington Square, Tompkins, all kinds of parks. But Prospect seems special somehow.
I love Prospect Park. I love it. I I guess, because it's still has a sort of wild and desolate quality to it, you know.
And is that because of the trees and the paths, as opposed to kind of Central Park, which is kind of scrubbed free of bushes and meant a little more for kind of, I don't know, cars in some parts? Is it more wild in the sense of more bushes? Is that what you mean? Because I don't know. I've of course been to Prospect Park, but I don't know it that well.
Yeah, it's more overgrown and just wild in terms of the vegetation and cracked sidewalks, and it's sort of parts of it are sort of decayed in a beautiful way, and it can feel kind of lonely in a beautiful way.
So I'd love to hear another poem you have. I know there's three you're reading, I think. And what is the next one?
Oh, well, it's about Prospect Park. It's called The Concert Grove. So I'll read it. There was a place in Prospect Park with busts of great composers, of Beethoven and Mozart. I would sit there. I loved it there because there was much underbrush behind the bust of Mozart where you could pee. There were huge sycamore trees, and almost no one came there, and I could sit there for hours. I would try to write or just be happy sitting there. And Beethoven frowned and looked very forbidding. And Mozart, behind whom almost everybody peed, looked so happy. And the trees grew, and it was the concert grove. And I would sit there and try to write. And if I left there, it would be to go into even darker parts of the park, more dangerous, more beautifully abandoned. There were trees there I loved. Oh, how I loved the trees. Oh, how in love with life I was, and knew nothing. So that's The Concert Grove.
Thank you, Edgar. And how wonderful that was right after our talk on Prospect Park. Since this is a park that you go to now, in this poem, in that beautiful poem, you say you're speaking in the past tense. It was, but this still is. Is that correct?
Yes, that the Concert Grove is still there, thank God. I don't know why I wrote about it in the past tense then. This is something I wrote pretty recently. I don't know why I did that, but I did.
Well, I like that. It creates a certain kind of, nostalgia again, a type of yearning, almost for a moment that's passed that can never be experienced again in a sense, but it was something fleeting is how I experience that, using the past tense.
Yeah. I guess I've just been going there for so many years, that I'm thinking of myself over the years sitting there,
And now I, you know, the more I read about your writing about Prospect Park, it seems such. I can see how starkly different it is from Central Park, because just the experience you described, you really couldn't have in Central Park, I don't think. You know, perhaps very far north, but I don't think there's anything that's quite as wild or as decaying or as even dangerous as you described there.
Yeah, me either.
Well, Edgar, I'd love to hear one more if you have another one.
Yeah, okay. Well, this one is, I wrote, I guess, about 2 summers ago. And it's called Fried Chicken Boy. I think of fried chicken picnics of years past, say 20 years ago, when I would get fried chicken at the Kennedy takeout joint on Flatbush Avenue and bring it to the park. I was in my early 40s, still savagely shy, as shy as a very young man. It was strange and new to me to get fried chicken for myself. It seemed indulgent, extravagant to me, a breast and a wing and a roll in a little box that I would bring to the park. How green the leaves were in the long day. How dear to me my heart. Oh, today I am sad in the green leaves. Today my heart yearns for what it once was. Today my heart longs for the heart of a boy. Today my heart longs for the appetites and hopes of long ago. I long for the hunger of long ago and newborn love that could feast on hope. I long for what I was. So that's Fried Chicken Boy.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Edgar. It's such a pleasure to talk with you, Edgar. Before we go, I think I just want to say that it's so interesting that in this pandemic, in this time when we can no longer perform easily and talk easily, poetry and you're reading it in an audio form where listeners everywhere can hear it seems to work somehow, to be alive. Do you think so? And is this happening in other ways for you? It's a way to reach an audience, right? A way to perform that has a different kind of feeling now because we can't see one another and go out to a performance.
Yeah, it's really fun to talk to you and to read to everyone over the phone like this. I love it, you know, because I don't get to perform that much these days, you know.
And before we go, is there a performance coming up? Will there be another production that you want to mention that you're working on? And perhaps we'll talk about it again in the future, but is there any other project like that you're working on that will involve the kinds of productions you've done in the past at Access Theater?
Well, I'm working right now on a podcast with my friend Anthony Corona that we're going to be recording and hope to get distributed somehow, and I also very much hope that I will, when theater can happen again, do a new one-man show at the Axis Theater with Randy Sharp, you know, who runs the Axis Theater and who has directed my one-man shows there for the past 10 years. I hope very much I can do another one-man show at Axis with Randy. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
And are there other, you know, you've done so many interesting collaborations with people. You've been in videos and other people's performances, but you've also are collaborating, making books, which we talked about in your last interview, these beautiful, really handmade books of your poetry. And you've also made vinyl records of your poems. Are there more collaborations like that as well? Will there be another book like you've made, another beautiful book? And will there also perhaps be another record?
Well, Oil Can Press is coming out with another book that's a collection of three of my plays. Aaron Howard from Oil Can Press is putting it out. It's going to be called The Ghost of Brooklyn. And I think that will be coming out soon. So I'm looking forward to that. You know?
I love that. That would be your biggest book, wouldn't it? That would be quite a large book, or no, compared to the other books of poems?
Yeah, that would be the biggest Oil Can Press book so far. Yeah.
And would that also have drawings and illustrations? I think it's Aaron that does the illustrations sometimes. Is that correct? I mean, there's personal photographs of yours, drawings of your sister as well. And then there's also his kind of beautiful artwork. Will there be artwork like that in this one?
This one will mainly have illustrations by my sister Helen, but Aaron is designing the whole thing, so it will very much have his imprint in terms of design, you know. But it's going to be illustrated by Helen, my sister.
That's so exciting. I'm glad we mentioned that. Edgar, before I let you go, I just want to thank you so much for your time, for sharing your poems and for writing them. I wish you a beautiful snowy day and a warm reception in your apartment on Attorney Street.
Thank you, Brainerd, and beautiful snowy day to you, too.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.